Deuteronomy chapter 3. He's reflecting here on how the 2.5 tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh, had asked if they could inherit land east of the River Jordan. Now, they did that because they had a lot of cattle, and they thought, wow, this is really good grazing territory. We want to stay here. We don't want to cross the Jordan, where there's a load of tribes that we've got to fight and drive out. We just stay here. By doing so, they were really acting in a very short-termist sort of way. Oh, I like this. What I see with my eyes, that's good. Yeah, yeah, I want to stay here. I don't want to fight. Yeah, yeah, I just want to have this bit for myself. They had no sense of the need to ensure that their brethren got their inheritance. They weren't concerned about the need to all be together so that they could all go to the sanctuary, keep the feast 3 times a year. There was the River Jordan dividing them, which had no bridge over it, and at harvest time and various other times it was in full flow. It would have been difficult, therefore, for them to cross it in order to all come and keep the feasts 3 times a year. All the men were to come and appear before Yahweh at the feasts at the sanctuary. Well, they didn't care about that. This looks good. I want it right now for myself. Don't want to do the hard work. It'll still be maybe an inheritance in the kingdom. It's a kind of shortcut. And God doesn't say no. He doesn't give them all the reasons that I've just given, that you'll be a long way from the sanctuary, you're not really caring for your brethren, you're just seeing what you think is good. Actually, God's prepared for you a good inheritance, a truly good land within Canaan. And the spies have come back and said it is truly a good land, etc. God doesn't use any of those arguments. He says, okay, that's what you want, you shall get. And in essence, that is what God does with us in our lives. What you want is what, in essence, you get. And you've got to, therefore, be careful what you actually desire. But he gives them a number of demands and conditions which are really very difficult. He says in verse 18, "You shall pass over armed before your brothers." So they actually had to leave their women and children behind, east of Jordan, undefended, with all their cattle that they loved so much, and their soldiers had to go over with the rest of the Israelites and to be the advance guard. They were to go in front. They were to be the ones who first engaged with the enemy. So there was really no shortcut to God's kingdom. They could only return, verse 20, to their possession east of Jordan when Yahweh gives rest to your brothers. Also, when you look at that territory that was offered to them east of Jordan, it's the territory as it's defined when they actually told where they are to settle is far bigger than just the bit of pasture land that they rather fancied. It included all of Argob and what is called the land of the Rephaim, that is, the giants. That huge territory that they were told that they had to conquer east of Jordan was actually about the same size as all the territory west of Jordan put together. And they were told, you've got to subdue all this. This was a massive amount of work, and the people who lived there were giants. It was the land of the Rephaim, we're told. And so there is no shortcut to God's kingdom. There's no having a bit of this and a bit of that. There's no serving two masters. And as we mature spiritually, hopefully we come to realize that there's no shortcuts. And as Paul puts it, if one is running in the race, you've got to run according to the rules. You cannot take a shortcut. And he says that, I think, because he realized that those to whom he was writing, and he wrote that to Timothy, were just human, like all of us, and had that tendency to think that maybe we could take a shortcut. And we all have that. In whatever task we have in our life, it could be doing a DIY job, could be building, physically building, could be all sorts of things. We tend to think, oh, but if I just do that, I could bypass that. And in spiritual life, it's the same. But there is no shortcut to God's kingdom. I like verse 19 here. But your wives and your little ones and your livestock, I know that you have much livestock, shall live in your cities, which I have given you. See there God's awareness of their situation. I know that you have much cattle. Yes, I know. I understand your thinking. I understand your situation. And that great understanding of God is something that we need to be aware of. It's not that God doesn't notice or God doesn't see. He knows. He knows absolutely all our thoughts, our situations, what we are inclined to think, what we are inclined to worry about. He knows all this. But in the end, God's way is better. And if you look at the history of those Israelites who settled east of Jordan, it's not a happy history. In the end, they drift off, they're the first to be taken into captivity in Assyria, and finally they assimilate into the surrounding world, and their relationship with God was lost. This is it. If you think there's a shortcut, well, there isn't, and that, in the end, is what's going to happen. So then, all the same, God wanted to save them, and I think that that is why he says that, well, you are going to have to go in the vanguard, you're going to have to go in the front of your brethren, get them inheritance in the kingdom, and you're going to have to trust in me to look after all your beloved cattle, and I know you've got lots of them, and your wives and little ones, because you are not supposed to be there with them. You've all got to go, all your soldiers, and fight for your brethren, not for yourselves. So God was trying to win them back, by all means. But I think we've seen the syndrome of shortcuts to the kingdom. People who say, for example, oh, I got this offer, this really great job, and, well, there's no church nearby, but I'm going to relocate, and, yeah, I'll be good, I'll be fine. And they don't attend church, they don't respond. They cut themselves off effectively. They assume that, well, God is still with me. And yet God is. God won't leave you. And yet, bit by bit, they drift off, just as happened to those on the east of Jordan. But God will not, as it were, bang the desk and say, no, I won't let you do that. You see, God is not a manipulator. He's an encourager and he's a confirmer of the positions that people wish to take, and yet he also, of course, seeks to woo us and to win us towards his way. This is why his workings in human lives are so complex, far beyond our understanding, because on one hand he recognizes human free will and is so respectful towards us and gives us in that sense what we want, and yet he also seeks to bring us by all means to his kingdom.